with you. It should be on. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. We're going to go ahead and get started in the interest of time. This is the desktop development panel. And again, we really appreciate you taking the time to come out and talk to us. This isn't really a big presentation. It's hopefully a big discussion. And today we have with us the engineering team members that will introduce themselves in a second that do represent desktop development quite a bit at Microsoft. And this is your opportunity to give us feedback. Let us know what you think, ask questions, et cetera. Yeah, we have folks everything from Windows, XAML, C++, and .NET here, so it's a really good representation. Let me kick things off by saying this is our agenda for today. We're going to do about 3 slides on kind of what's new. I want to make sure folks in the room know that we have made a bunch of investments that not everybody knows about. I want to make sure everybody does know about them when they leave this room today. And then we're just going to have a panel discussion going forward. That means that folks will hopefully be brave, get up, use the microphones and come up and ask questions, and we'll take it from there. But before we get started, I want to make sure the team gets a chance to introduce themselves, so I'll let them do it. Go ahead, Tim, you can start.
My name is Tim Heuer. I'm one of the program managers on the XAML UI platform in Windows, which includes WPF, Silverlight on the phone, and as well as all the new stuff in WinRT.
I'm Habib Haydarian. I'm a program manager on the .NET platform team, which includes things like the .NET runtime, .NET framework, as well as fundamentals, including setup and servicing.
Hey, everyone. I'm Chapala Street. I'm a program manager on the XAML team with Tim.
Hi. I'm Eric Battaglio. I'm a program manager on the Visual C++ team. That includes the compiler and on the C++ specific bits in the IDE.
Great. Thanks, guys. So that's the team that you're going to get a chance to talk to today. But we're going to do just, again, a couple of slides and talk about what's new for WPF. It's not everything, but it's a few things I wanted to highlight today. We have made investments in Visual Studio 2013 to make sure that the XAML tooling stays up to date, not just for the newest technologies like, you know, Windows Store, Windows Phone applications, but everything that we did in 2013 for XAML works for WPF and actually even Silverlight developers. So we feel that it's a pretty good story. We believe in our tooling. We're going to do everything we can to make sure our tooling is a great experience for WPF developers, just like any other developer out there. You're hopefully all desktop developers here, and we really want to make sure that you're taken care of. But this is the right time to say, what else would you like to see? Where do you feel things are good or not good? You know, hopefully you'll get up and ask those questions. We've also recently released from our patterns and practices team the new version of Prism. It's a way that I've personally built applications for customers, and hopefully you've looked at this as well, where Prism with WPF and .NET 4.5 is now enhanced. It's more PCL-based. It has addressed a bunch of other different kind of issues. The team is moving forward, right? The Prism technology from patterns and practices is not dead. It's been quiet for a while for WPF, but they are on a constant release cycle. You know, they do churns. They did Windows Store for a while. Now they're doing WPF. Now they're going to go back to Store. So they're going to keep turning and releasing features. Certainly, we can hear feedback on this as well from you. We've also made investments in debugging and diagnostics. For example, the managed memory analyzer for .NET does support WPF applications, and we've made a bunch of .NET 4.5.1 updates where, you know, edit and continue works and the debugging is improved and such. But we know this is just the tip of the iceberg, and there's a lot of questions, a lot of concern out there, and we wanted to give you an opportunity to talk right to the product team that can make the decisions down the line to hopefully make desktop development, WPF, or even C++ with MFC better for you. At least we'd like to hear your feedback. We did this at Build. We wanted to do it again at TechEd. We have microphones in the middle, and I want to know who's the bravest person in the room here who's going to get up and ask the first question. So this is the panel part, and if I have to run up and down the halls here to get you guys to ask questions, I will. But really, it's all about you talking to us. I can't imagine that folks here build applications but have nothing they'd like to ask, so please come up. Ask a question. Or these guys will start talking, and they can do that for 75 minutes. Trust me. They're a very talkative bunch. So who here builds WPF apps? Can I get a raise of hands? Great. So I can't imagine your lives are perfect or you have no questions. We'd love to hear from you. We have a brave soul. Whoever come up first, you know, we have no order.
So I've been seeing a lot of stuff about like .NET v Next and things like that, which look pretty cool. I'm at a corporation where we're still on .NET 4, kind of enterprise-wide, and if I could roll out apps with pieces of .NET 4 or 5 and use those features, that would be really nice. From what I understand, that's really kind of just an ASP.NET type thing. Is that correct, or can you fill me in on that?
I want to make sure that I understand the question correctly. Is your question that you have a solution right now that's running on .NET 4.0 and you're looking to take advantage of the new features in ASP.NET? Is that how
I... No, I want to use the... where I can deploy just small modules of .NET, right? So if I could somehow deploy a 4.5 app in a purely 4.0 kind of environment, is that possible for the desktop apps?
Okay, so .NET 4.5 as well as 4.5.1 and 4.5.2 for that matter are in-place updates, meaning if you are running your app on .NET 4.0 today... if you were to install, let's say, .NET 4.5.2, it'll actually be an in-place update, so it'll automatically upgrade your application. When it comes to the new innovations around ASP.NET VNext, for example, I think one of the beautiful things about the new model is the fact that everything is app local, meaning if you were to deploy your new ASP.NET VNext application, it can live side by side with your existing app as well. However, as I said, if you're planning to upgrade to, let's say, .NET 4.5.1 or 4.5.2, and you're running your app currently on .NET 4.0, it's in place. So it's not side-by-side.
Right. Okay. So if I want a 4.5.1, 4.5.2 app, I need to install that on all my desktops to get that for a desktop application.
Correct. Right. If you want all the new functionality in any of those, you'd have to install .NET 4.5.1 or 4.5.2.
Okay.
So just to expand on that, I'm not sure if I want to make sure that we're clear. When they talk about packaging all the framework assemblies and everything into one piece for ASP.NET, that functionality isn't there for desktop applications so that I don't have to deploy the framework and my application?
That is correct. At build and at takeout, we introduced essentially two what we're referring to as optimized versions of .NET. There is .NET Native, which is 4v1 for store applications, where the framework and your libraries get linked into your app and get deployed as one single unit.
Yeah.
That same also is true for ASP.NET VNext, where all of your CLR as well as your libraries get deployed in a single directory. That functionality is not available for desktop apps. However, the one thing I can tell you is when it comes to .NET Native, we are looking at how we bring some of that functionality for desktop apps as well in a future version of .NET, but it's not going to be there for the next version of .NET.
Okay. We build jewelry design tools, and we use WPF pretty exclusively on our newer tools. And we have a situation where we have another application that we pull up inside of us by reparenting their Windows. It's a CAD engine. And so we talked to it programmatically using a .NET wrapper around their C++ libraries. And in one of our tools where we haven't separated the UI from the CAD engine, where it's all in one solution, when we're working in the designer, it tries to spin up these DLLs that cannot be instantiated outside of the scope of the actual CAD program. And so Visual Studio just goes kind of crazy for a while. The xdesk proc exe hangs or appears to hang and happens like every 15 minutes. And I'm wondering, I talked a little bit to, is it Hare Krishna Menon, about maybe an exclusion list or something, but he thought maybe I should bring it up as something that maybe you guys could have some insight on that or...
Tim, do you want to? Yeah. So in the design surface, so what I understand is you basically kind of have a component model, and the one component is trying to do things that it doesn't understand can do in design mode, basically.
It seems like just having a reference to this assembly in a project that I also have WPF in, and then I'm in the design surface, and it does the reflection or whatever to try and bring everything to life. It looks at this DLL and the shadow cache just gets millions of copies copied in there and it never actually comes up. But that's, I should say, in 2013. Everything worked in 2012, and in 2013 we can't open this solution in the XAML designer surface most times.
So. Okay, I think Hari actually probably would be the best person to kind of dig into the next level details there, and he's in the back still.
Yeah.
So. One question I would have in this suggestion is that if like if the wrapper is represented as angle brackets in the pages that you're trying to open, you know, maybe moving those to a code area and wrapping that call in the design mode checks so that it doesn't try to instantiate those objects on the design surface. That may be something to try. I don't know if it's feasible in your solution.
We're not referencing or accessing it at all in the XAML.
I see. Okay. So it's just the shadow copy. Yeah, yeah. I think probably be good if Hari can get like a next level deep of a repro on that so we can figure out what's going on. Okay. You know, the changes from 2010 to, you know, to 2012 and 2013 for the design service and moving it out of proc and things like that are, probably have some nuances there that I would mention.
Our other application works without the issue because we separated out the CAD calls into a separate project, and we use WCF to talk across there. So that was our only solution. But this other tool we have, we can't do that at this time. So
okay.
Thanks.
Yep. Hey, I've been doing WPF for a while. Love XAML. It's just a great framework, and I used to do a lot in WinForms, and then converting that over to XAML, that was a just we did some hosting WinForms inside of the XAML, and there were some drawing issues there. It's been great moving over, going to the MVVM framework. And anyway, I just want to say I like it. I guess my real question is, a lot of our clients right now, they're using this WPF application that we've been writing, and our delivery mechanism is still click once. It's just very effective that way. We'd like to move over to Windows Store, but they haven't really moved to the latest version of Windows in order to enable that. Is there some strategy to have legacy? Do you have any advice or what are your recommendations as we go forward with our WPF application?
From a deployment perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a really good question, and something that we are... So right now, just to give you some context on the Windows platform side of things, and you know, kind of on the .NET side is always, you know, planning and iterating on a much rapid release cycle, more so than on the Windows side, I think. I think that's a fair statement to make. On the Windows side, we're kind of in the planning phases for kind of what's next, and what's next may be, you know, the next servicing release as well as the next major release. And one of the things that we're looking at is deployment of desktop apps through alternate means, because we've heard this a lot as, you know, like I have an MSI, but, you know, I kind of like this store model, and maybe I like the kind of, I want to do my own company store model with my own desktop apps. So nothing concrete yet, but that is something that's on our radar. And we think about it not only as a Windows 8 issue as well. Most of the enterprises that probably fall into the same bucket that you have are in kind of a Win 7 world, and so we're trying to figure out, like, what does that mean? You know, is there opportunity there for newer deployment mechanisms? You know, using things like Intune and the other kind of system center type things might be things to consider as well that people have had success with. A lot of people like surfacing those through kind of company portal aspects. I know we at Microsoft actually do the same thing as well. But it is definitely something that, you know, we're thinking, we've heard, and you kind of, you actually can, on the public store today, you can get classic desktop apps listed in the public store. When it comes down to actual deployment, it's not through the same mechanism right now.
Right.
And then it's, of course, it's not a private thing that we expose to enterprises, which I assume is what you probably actually want.
Yeah.
A similar kind of APEX deployment mechanism for you know, .NET apps, basically. So that's, again, nothing concrete, but it is something that the store teams are actually looking at right now as for the next iteration of Windows deployment.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I mean, that would be great if we could just point them to some URL or even configure it in their Windows box and it automatically goes there. That click once is really effective in that sense right now. I mean, there's some problems with it, but
right.
It's been great. Thank you.
Hey, I have a couple things to mention. Hopefully I remember them all by the end. So the first is, I know you've been talking in previous sessions about hardening the designer so it doesn't crash. And two things about that. Is it recommended to always work in x86 mode in the designer? Because I've noticed that sometimes x64 stuff just kind of fails. And the other is, if you have your nested user controls, custom user controls that you've made, you put them in a shared UI library, per se, and then you try to load it up in a purely XAML MVVM way. If you don't actually touch the code in CodeBehind, then your user control just never shows up. If it's just, you know, purely XAML stuff. And the last thing, if you can remember all these, is just indenting. If you auto-format the document, say you remove a tag or you add a new tag and you just want to do the, you know, control KD. If you have multi-line XAML, is there a way, there's probably a way, but is there a way to just also move the multi-line XAML over? Because if you just auto-format, it just moves the main tag. So I'll stay here if you need to repeat.
I see Hari walking up here, which these are three great questions for him. I think I can answer the first one, which is, yes, it's x86 only. Right, Hari? Okay, come up and answer the rest of them then. Okay, so the second one, so first one was, you know, problems with x64. So the designer process is an x86 process, so it'll only work in that. Second one was user control libraries that are, you know, maybe some shared UI, and they're not rendering on the design surface unless you touch code behind.
Yeah, just a stupid little, you know, new up something, anything in that library, and then the library will work.
And then the third one was which?
It's just auto-formatting and making
auto-formatting.
Sure the multi-line works.
So auto-formatting multi-line, what do you mean? Setting properties in different lines?
Yeah, if you like to line up everything instead of doing it all in one line. And then you just, you know, auto-format the document. Just the main tags, all the main tags will move, but then those other things that you put in a pristine line before, now they're off. And so you either have to tab them all over or tab them back.
No, there is a specific formatting option that you can set in the editor, tools options, XAML editor, where you can say, specify that I just want my name property and everything else on the same, on a different line. And the editor will automatically format that for you.
And if I don't want them all on different lines?
Then you can turn that option off, and everything will be in a single line.
He's got a mix. It sounds
like. Oh, you have a mix?
Yeah, I like.
Unfortunately, they don't support a mix. It's either single property on the first line and every other property on a different line, or everything on the same line.
Okay. And is anything going to happen with the shared UI libraries not having to touch the code? Is that a known bug or?
I've not heard of the bug. We should talk offline.
Okay.
I can think about the offline and figure that out.
I went to a talk earlier today about Windows Phone, and they showed some kind of cool stuff in the unit testing framework, like these data row attributes and kind of wrapping an exception, a line that's going to throw an exception and an assert, which looked kind of cool. It looked like it was using like a different framework, though. Am I incorrect about that, or does the desktop app unit testing framework have all these features as well? Because they claimed that it was two different frameworks that weren't consolidated yet.
Yeah, I think the unit testing framework for the phone, it was for WinRT, right?
He was doing WinPhone development, I guess, WinPhone 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
It probably was in the WinRT world. And the nature of some of the system infrastructure changes in WinRT required different changes in the unit testing framework because they actually have to spin up effectively an app itself, which is exactly kind of what the designer does as well. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be different than, let's say, if you just, you know, annotated unit test methods for like WinForms or something like that.
Sure.
I would say it would surprise me if the core kind of annotation and kind of model around test case, test method, and those things were different. But some of the nuances are probably definitely a little different. But the test runner should, you know, from a VS perspective, the test runner should execute them very similarly. You know, all the kind of new innovations that we take in the, you know, things like unit testing are coming in, generally speaking, the newer target platforms that don't have any of those things first, and then, you know, evaluated to see if it makes sense to bring any of those things back to Windows Forms or WPF or things like that. So without seeing the specific example, that's the only thing I could probably answer is there's probably some nuanced differences, but it would surprise me if they're significantly different as far as like how test cases are actually built and executed from a VS developer perspective.
So I guess one specific example would be a data row attribute that you can tag a unit test with, and it feeds it with data. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
I haven't tested this, and you know, I just saw this today, so I don't know if this exists for desktop apps or.
That's a good question.
Okay.
I don't know either.
All right. Thanks.
Hello, I just have a question about ClickOnce. With the new 4.5, is there a way to effectively bootstrap it to the installer? Because I know, I've tried it before with 4.0, and that never seemed to work. But with 4.5, is there a way to, so this way, I don't, you know, you don't have to do it manually.
just comes off over the wire with the installer. Is there a way that actually works and it's easy?
I can tell you we haven't really made that many changes to ClickOnce since 4.0. So if that's not possible in 4.0, it's a high likelihood that it doesn't. That feature is also not available in the latest version of framework. Can you tell me a little bit more about your scenario? What do you?
Well, because just recently I've updated to 4.5.
Yes.
So you know, just to make our life easier with the async stuff, and everybody, you know, most of the clients don't have 4.5 installed. So we just, you know, when it's pushed over, you know, we have to manually go there and install everything, and especially it's on behind a corporate firewall, so we have to do the, you know, offline. So this way, you know, whether we could package it together. And I didn't actually try it, but I know before, whenever the bootstrapper was selected, the package never built for me. I don't know whether it was like a tooling thing or anything. So, you know, I kind of gave up on that. But I was wondering if there is an effective way to do it with the new.
I'm not sure, but I can certainly go find out from our resident expert back in Redmond to find out whether you can actually do that or not. Okay. If you can follow up with me offline, I'll find out for you.
Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Hi, we're a C# WPF shop, and I love WPF. It's awesome. XAML is awesome. I love how expressive it is, how much you can do with it, but it's so verbose. Are there any plans to sort of make it easier to use XAML? Like with C#, they introduced things like link, where before you would have to have all these nested for loops and stuff, and all of a sudden you have the .where clause, and it's like, oh my god, this is awesome. Is there something like that for XAML? Because I work in XAML all the time, and I still can't remember all the syntax all the time to do, not for data bindings, sometimes data bindings, but event setters, all that sort of stuff. And we actually have, we had a co-op at my office, and what he actually did is he wrote a custom extension for Visual Studio called Quick Converter, and it lets you write C# code in your XAML. So instead of having to go write this converter file and then have it as a whole separate class, you can just write C# right in line in your XAML. And like, that is awesome. But right now it's only available for converters. Like, that's the type of thing I was expecting to see from Microsoft. Not initially, but you know, after 2 or 3 years of XAML being out, but it just seems like nothing's, I don't know, I'm just, are there improvements coming to like the XAML syntax to make it easier, is what I'm asking, I guess.
It's a good question. I think one of the aspects that I think, you know, I'll point to the tools to help you be more productive in discovery of some of those things. And Hari just had a session this morning talking about that slide that had all those improvements. And, you know, when people get kind of tripped up on the binding syntax and like, you know, states and storyboards and things like that, the tools team has done an incredible amount of work to improve the editor IntelliSense experience so that the verbosity seems less verbose because auto-completion helps you a little bit more, in addition to code snippets and enabling those things. So kind of routine operations you can kind of be a lot more productive in. The second part of your question, I think, is like, okay, that's great. Those will help me, but like, how does the language actually evolve? And I think, you know, as you've seen from WPF to Silverlight to WinRT, it has evolved as far as, you know, and some people see the evolution as a, you know, some takebacks of some features. It actually has been our effort to simplify things a little bit more and to kind of hone in on where the most performant features in those aspects. Some of the concepts that you talk about, like Quick Converter, like what you guys did, you know, XAML itself is a public language spec, and so, you know, to significantly change that, you know, as we want to make sure that we adhere to the language spec itself. So we've actually thought a little bit about, we call that scripting internally, to kind of do some scripting blocks. We've thought about that. We actually have some internal frameworks that do similar concepts. One of the things that we are actually looking at for the next release is thinking about how concepts like binding become more of a push mechanism, more of a code gen mechanism, so that you wouldn't have to do something like a value converter. You could say, hey, I just want to bind, and you know, I'm going to call this function to format something rather than saying, I need a value converter that does the convert, and that's going to pass into my binding. So while not direct inline script or C#, we're kind of looking at these ways of how we can create some type of property parser path object that is directives more to the XAML compiler to generate code for you and get less markup in your runtime that does a more interpretive mode. So the quick converter concept, which you call it, is something directly that we're kind of looking at, not necessarily, like I said, not writing C#. You guys have done it. You can actually do it today. We get a lot of questions about like ifdef XAML as well. You can actually do it today. The designer will break, but I mean, it's just a C++ compiler thing that you can do. Those are things we're looking at. You know, how verbose XAML gets is something that we're sensitive to, and we're trying to remove some of the more verbose things of like, oh, I need to add this, and I didn't know I had to have a collection first to add it. You know, we want to do some things more implicitly, but our take on improving things and changing the language at all is always going to be a perf-focused approach. And so, you know, we want to make sure that apps that are being delivered are perf first for the best user experience. So we want to be sensitive to what we're adding into the markup area, which is why we're looking at more of like a compiled approach in the tools.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
So in terms of going to 4.5, since it's kind of an in-place update, sometimes we've seen quirky behavior with some of our apps when we get upgraded. For 4.5.2, was there any work done to kind of make it more backwards compatible or address any issues that you know of? And now with the new kind of agile approach at Microsoft, should we expect like a 4.5.3 coming, or is 5 really the next kind of update for .NET?
That's a great question. So when it comes to compatibility, one of the things that we're really focusing on is making sure that, especially because .NET framework is now in place. In the past, you had the choice of you just make it side by side and you stay on if it wasn't compatible, is to make it highly, highly compatible. So I'll give you a couple of examples. For .NET 4.5.1, we made just over 300 compatibility fixes just to make it that much better, because the feedback we received for .NET 4.5 was that it wasn't very compatible. And I can tell you for .NET 4.5.2, we made an additional 120-something compatibility fixes as well. So what you'll find is 4.5.2 is way, way more compatible than 4.5 ever was. The other thing I can tell you is when it comes to our cadence, if you recall back in November, we made this promise that around continuous value, or continuous delivery, where we're not going to wait every 3 years to deliver a new version of .NET. So what I can tell you is we released .NET 4.5.1 a year after .NET 4.5. We released .NET 4.5.2 about 6 months after .NET 4.5.1. So that cadence is just going to continue forevermore, because what we're finding is really the pace of innovation in frameworks and libraries is increasing exponentially. You can no longer release things every 3 years and be good for the next 4 or 5. So that cadence will continue. And and especially the other thing is, since we're adopting this open development model with ASP.NET VNext or .NET Native, those are great examples, right? We'll actually not even wait to release a big version of .NET framework. We'll just release the latest version of a library or latest version of a framework without even being tied to a big release. However, we want to make sure that those innovation/investments work with existing applications as well.
Thanks.
Okay.
Hi. I'm a WPF developer, and the type of applications that we develop are line of business applications that are busy enough on screen that they probably will never be touch applications. And looking at the Windows Store model, it felt like almost a fork of WPF. The concepts are the same, but entirely different namespaces, assemblies, that kind of stuff with the Windows runtime. And I wondered, do you foresee the ability to write desktop applications but using the Windows runtime?
Sure. Yes, so I think that's a great question. And if you notice, when Windows 8 first came out, it was all about mobile, and we didn't put very much emphasis on the desktop. And I think that's something that's changing a lot internally, and we're messaging a lot more emphasis that we understand the desktop isn't going away, and that it's here to stay, and it's still a very useful thing. And our vision for that is more of a universal app. So in 8.0, we had spacing, which was really wide, and probably even too wide for touch. And then our legacy desktop apps were really tight and only usable via mouse and keyboard. And so now we're moving more towards universal apps that you can write with our modern frameworks, which have spacing, which are nice for desktop usage and still allows you to be productive. But say if you moved to touch, it would also allow you the affordance for good touch spacing. And so those are things that we deal with internally, for example, Office and Outlook, right? Like, there will be a desktop Outlook, and we also need Outlook that runs on mobile devices. And we don't want to maintain four or five different versions of the app, so we'd like to move towards a universal Outlook that works well both for desktop and for touch. And so those are things that we're looking towards and should be giving you guidance about how to code for desktop productivity development and mobile productivity.
Thanks. I also had one other question specific to WPF. It's just a little pain point, I guess. Implicit styles for windows and user controls. Since every window and every user control is a specific subclass of that type, in the past, you couldn't define an implicit style that would apply to all windows or all user controls. Is there anything that we could do to address that, or any plans to address that?
No, but we can. If you follow up with us, we'll follow up with you.
Thanks.
I just had another quick question, but so I love XAML. I've worked with HTML a lot with a Knockout and Angular, just jQuery, written some websites around those, as well as WinForms, and been doing WPF now for about 4 years. It's great. I'm completely sold. So I guess the issue I see right now is, as we've written some of these desktop applications, we realize that some of the functionality could actually go on a mobile device, and we could convert some of that. We could write a new application altogether, and I think the partnership with Xamarin is just fantastic. It's awesome, but there's still one piece missing, and that's where we can write up to like the view model layer, but the view, the interaction with the actual devices to our view models, that's still we have to write that specifically for iOS or specifically for Android, and it'd be great if we could have XAML, and I love XAML, you know, compared to AXML or all the other stuff. It's great. I guess my question I'm coming to is, I know there's some companies out there like Neosys Engine. They sell a XAML solution, but and I've spoken a little bit earlier about this as well. But I just kind of wanted to get some more opinions or just throw it out there. But what are your thoughts about kind of having writing the entire solution? MVVM, XAML, all the way down through C#, having it compiled in Mono and .NET, and having it run on multiple devices. Just wondering if maybe I could grab some of your thoughts on that.
Thanks for pointing out the Noisys is a good example of, you know, a third party that's trying to achieve that. I think more directly on the Windows platform, the kind of the owners of XAML, that it's not something that we're directly thinking about right now. Is, you know, how do we deliver XAML to non-Windows platforms as a UI platform? You know, we think about if you need a strong cross-platform strategy for all devices, you know, HTML is definitely a way to go. If you love the language of C#, you know, as you've seen, we've done increased tooling and work with the .NET team to make capabilities for Xamarin, more able. We've also introduced the concept of shared projects within Visual Studio, which right now, you know, officially supported is really in the store frameworks, but we have released a VS extension that allows you to kind of add reference to shared projects to any Visual Studio project. So you could build, have a common set of shared code across, you know, a Xamarin project, an Android, a class library, WPF, Windows Forms, et cetera. So those are kind of the things that, you know, I think you also have to kind of pivot on what is going to be the best user experience for your app. And, you know, is it, do you want the truly native device experience? And, you know, do as much as you can, like you said, up to a certain layer. UI abstraction layers are really tough. And so, you know, we're not sure our customers would be happy if we delivered, you know, XAML -- that would work on devices. And so that's, you know, from my perspective, that's one reason why it's kind of not, at least from my team's perspective, why it hasn't really been on our radar as a challenge that that we feel we want to solve. You know, we want to make sure that we provide the best native experience for the Windows native platform, and we also provide a great web platform for cross-device development. You know, in the future, who knows? You know, what will happen there? But it's not presently something that we're looking to tackle.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, it does seem like really complex. Appreciate it.
I got another question. With Visual Studio 2012, we used primarily Expression Blend to do all of our WPF development and fell in love with the tool, and it was awesome. And then when 2013 came out, we had a lot of that functionality, and we found almost 90% of what we needed in the Visual Studio side of things with the import of the same designer. My question is, I saw in other sessions newer features that are being brought into Blend, but not yet into the designer in Visual Studio. So are we going to go back, are we going back to using the Blend as the flagship for XAML editing? Or are we going to get view states inside of Studio sometime so I don't have to go to Blend? Or what?
Why are there two tools, Hari?
So as you know, most of the features available in VS and Blend are available on both platforms in the designer. But things like states and stuff, what we believe to be just purely design-oriented workflows, we would like to keep in Blend. I think the one thing that came up during my session was in-place editing that is not available in VS. Yeah. It's fundamentally the concept of related files don't exist in VS at this point, and that's the only reason it was not enabled. Hopefully in the next release, we'll be able to bridge that gap and enable that specific feature for Visual Studio as well.
I didn't know if you just needed me to make it heard so that other people know that we want that feature.
That's fine.
Fair to say that we're continually looking at it.
Yes.
Please.
Especially since the Visual State is by code into C#,
I'll definitely take the feedback back to my team.
I'm not sure if you're the right group of people to ask, but I'll ask it anyway. Relating to Roslyn coming out, I'm just wondering, because I know right now, like you've open sourced it, you want people to fork the branch, add their stuff, hopefully get it, like make a pull request, hopefully their changes get into it. But will it be possible for, say, myself, or for my organization, if I wanted to just make some custom compile time checks or whatever that are specific to my organization, and then just distribute that like in the Visual Studio extension gallery or something like that, so that rather than using something like TFS check-in policies to enforce that certain requirements are being met, we could have a break rate at compile time. And I understand this would require everyone on our team having that extension installed, which isn't a problem. Is that something that's going to be enabled with Roslyn, or is that not really how it's intended to be used, or?
I would say one of the beautiful things about Roslyn is the fact that it not only is it open source, but it's also licensed under Apache. You can download the code and do pretty much whatever you like with it. Now, the question that remains is, if you were to enable a feature, for example, in the compiler, let's say, right?
Yeah.
Then you have to make sure that you tool that feature yourself in the IDE as well. Now, the nice thing about the Roslyn is the fact that tooling the language feature is also very, very easy because you now have access to the entire things like the abstract syntax tree and so forth. So yes, feel free. You can, it's open source. You can do whatever you want in your organization. Obviously, then, the usual caveats imply as far as support is concerned, right? If it's your version of the compiler, then it's your version of the code then obviously
I guess what I'm asking is it going to be made to support plugins, because I don't want to actually create a custom compiled version of Roslyn to distribute to my team. I want them to have the Microsoft Roslyn with our plugins, essentially. Is that going to be something that's possible?
So by the way, I'm Jay. I think the way to think about it is Roslyn itself has got a number of different kind of layers to the compiler stack. There's the core compiler, right, which is where we do the language implementation and all of the actual compilation. That one, of course, is part of the open source project. You can contribute to it. That's where you would want to go and submit a pull request back to us, and hopefully, you know, it's something that's in the roadmap of what we're trying to do, and we take it in and make it available to everyone so that we would have as close to one, you know, C# or VB compiler for the world as possible.
Right.
Farther up in the layers are, we call them the workspace, which is where a bunch of the APIs that is really the innovation in Roslyn, which is what's exposing that intimate knowledge of your source code out from the compiler. That's the layer where you author these plugins, and you can do custom things in your own environment. You can do custom things that you distribute to other folks. I think, I don't know if you showed it in your session or not, we had this little fun demo. We refer to these as diagnostics, so things that you can do that run in the IDE as you're developing code that flag you to things that are as simple as you deviated from a coding pattern that we want to enforce in our team to you actually used an API in a way that's not beneficial, right, or going to hurt you.
Yeah.
You can add these and add them in the environment. You can have them custom for your organization, distribute them across, and people instantly get flagged with your coding standards, right as they're typing. You can even offer fixes for them. You can offer the ability to auto-fix that. So that's all fully supported.
So we would be able to do that on top of the Microsoft Roslyn,
exactly,
so I don't
exactly.
have a custom compiled.
Yep. Okay. You don't have to touch the lower level. You can just go right in on the top.
That is awesome. Okay.
Cool.
I'm curious as to what the C++ guys are working on for coming out down the pipeline.
So that's a pretty broad question. Are you familiar with the VC blog?
Yes.
Okay, so if you read the VC blog, we're pretty open there about some of the things we're working on. But we've got a lot of things that we're listening to customers about. So we're very interested in productivity, for example, and solving even some of the library challenges that people are having. We also hear a lot about conformance and MFC, for example. It's just about every post that we mention, anything remotely related to those, we get comments about them. So, you know, Herb gave a nice talk at Build talking about our conformance roadmap. I hope that you would watch that and see. Herb is a great speaker. We're on the path to conformance. We're even looking at C++ 14 and beyond. So I think we're doing a lot of great work there. And as far as MFC goes, you know, we're listening to feedback there, but, you know, we don't have definite plans, you know, kind of beyond what we've already stated about support and things like that. Do you have a specific, or I can always follow up with you. You've got specific things? Or
no,
you give me
I just wonder what they were working on. It just seems like C++ gets short shrift on everything on MSDN.
Ooh, so like documentation, the content experience?
Yeah, documentation in particular.
All right, yeah. I'll work with we have a pretty good relationship with the UA, the programming writers, and I'll work with them. I know that they're focused on scenarios, so they're really focused on the scenarios that we think customers are actually using versus just raw API documentation. So for example, instead of saying this is what, you know, this STL function does, and giving a very simple example or no example at all, it's here's an end-to-end example that uses this because this is what we think people are actually doing with it, and that's a lot more helpful. But again, if you know, I can catch you afterwards, I can give you my email. You can definitely give us feedback. You can also comment on the documentation. That team does pick up that information. So if you have feedback, please definitely share it with us.
Yeah, I had a question more about like the future of like Windows itself. I'm not sure this is the right forum, but like, I mean, as Oculus just recently got acquired, they were going to grow into this area where virtual reality is more of like the norm. And even you'd assume that one day we'll have a, you know, virtual reality Windows, and for administrators in the future, where like that hacker's movie that came out a long time ago with Angelina Jolie and whatnot, where they're actually like floating around in a 3D world. You'd imagine that one day that something like that is actually going to be convenient for administrators to be kind of doing like the Minority Report thing. Is there any kind of like future planning for that, or a framework starting to be developed now so that we can adopt now and start being a little ahead of the curve so that when it does come out, we can have advantage?
I don't know if you saw the MSR project about the contact lenses. We're going to make Oculus Rift look like child's play.
I didn't see that. What is that called?
No. We don't have anything that we're talking about now on that level of future innovation right now. I mean, you know, we've continued to improve like some aspects of natural user interface aspects. You know, extending Kinect to Windows and continuing to evolve Kinect as an aspect as well. As far as like kind of augmented reality and things like that, you know, nothing to share at this time.
Okay. I imagine this question's already been asked somewhere, but what does .NET Native mean for C++? Does that mean it's going to be obsolete in the near future, or just wondering?
Yep, we get that question a lot. And I would say, really, if you look at the tagline for .NET Native, it says the productivity of C# and the performance of C++. That's what we're aiming for when it comes to .NET Native. And what we know is the fact that there are a lot of customers out there that have huge C++ investments, and we would, you know, to be frank, never expect them to migrate over to C# because either because of specific requirements, for example, if they use, let's say, assembly in their code or things that are really downloadable to the hardware. I mean, you'll never be able to do those things in .NET Native. I think when I look at .NET Native in relation to the to C++, we like to tell folks that whatever you're comfortable with and whatever skill set you have, I think you should continue basically developing in that paradigm. So if you're a C# developer today, you can just continue writing C# code and .NET Native just magically happens for you, for example. The other thing that I want to point out is even though .NET Native starts to approach the performance of C++, it still has things like a garbage collector, an automatic garbage collector. So, and some folks I know in the C++ world either love to do their own manual garbage collection either through ref counting or whatever it is, or manual memory allocation. So if you really need to still fine-tune your app and really fine-tune how your working set and so forth, you know, C++ is still the way to go. .NET Native will never kind of, you know, let you get to the core of memory management. However, if you're an existing C# developer today, we just want to improve things for you without you having to do any work. So that's how we think about the relation between C++ and .NET Native.
So will those, I assume that'll apply to WPF, those performance improvements, like just out of the box? Like, that includes WPF, right? Or?
With .NET Native?
Yes.
So .NET Native V1 is targeted at store applications only, but we are looking at how we bring some of those investments to desktop applications in the future. But for V1, we're really just focusing on lighting up the store app scenarios because there are some low-hanging fruits that we can go after.
Okay.
So modern C++, you're not typically allocating your own memory using delete, new, and malloc and those types of things. So I just wanted to stand up and say C++ is still used, obviously, for places where performance, portability, and you know, speed really matter, and control. So, you know, we have a lot of users out there. Modern C++, C++ 11 is what you should be learning. So if you don't know C++ and you're interested, make sure you get a book like that. Also, if you're interested and you're a C# developer, we have a talk tomorrow, C++ scenarios for C# developers. So if you drop by there, we'll show you a little bit of code and show you what that actually looks like. But it's not like it used to be.
Okay. Thanks.
Hello. I work with embedded systems, and we made some applications using C# and compact framework .NET and using Visual Studio 2008. My question is, what is the roadmap for compact framework? And another question, when the new version of Visual Studio will support this development, this new application, because I'm using 2008 till now. Thank you.
So if my memory serves me right, Windows Embedded, whatever the name of the latest version is, was released in May of last year, if I remember correctly. And with that, we released a brand new version of .NET Compact Framework that has tooling with Visual Studio 2013. So if you were to upgrade to VS 2013 now, you not only get the, along with Windows Embedded, you not only get Compact Framework, I think version 3.5 something. You also get all the new tooling along with it. What I can tell you is, I'm not sure if you saw this at Build, but We made a pretty significant announcement around the Internet of Things scenario, which obviously includes things like embedded. And I can tell you across the board, whether if it's a tiny, tiny form factor all the way to headless devices, we are looking across the board to making a lot more investments in those areas, including looking at .NET Compact Framework. And in fact, there was an announcement made around us really focusing on how do we move .NET micro framework forward as well. So not only are we going to invest in Compact, but we're also going to invest in .NET micro framework going forward and tool it as well. So I know for the last n number of years, there really has been no tooling improvements either around Compact or micro, but we're going to see in the next version that we're going to tool up both of those things going forward. But yeah, as of 2013, you'll have a new version of Compact framework and tooling.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
I was just a little curious about the .NET Native and how it's limited to the Windows Store apps. Is that because there's some dependency on the Windows runtime or something, or is that why it can't be deployed elsewhere right now?
Yeah, so .NET Native really, there's a bit of history behind it. It's really a evolution of what we've been doing for the last, I guess, 3 years. In phone, I believe it was 7.1, we introduced this idea of compiler in the cloud. So you as a developer would upload IL to the store and it would compile it down to almost native, but there was a one last binding step that's required on the phone itself. For .NET Native, we're taking that one step further so that in the future, when you upload your IL to the cloud, it automatically gets compiled down to the architecture-specific things and get downloaded down to the device. And so the next step in that evolution is how we bring the same technology to essentially desktop applications. So that's how the journey went. There is no technological hurdles here for us to actually enable .NET Native for desktop apps. In fact, if you're adventurous enough, you could write a console app today and then run the .NET Native toolchain on it and introduce and actually produce .NET Native code. We're not documenting it, so that people don't start playing around with it, but I just want to show you proof that you can go and do it today if you'd like to.
Thanks.
Yep, no problem.
Recently, Windows XP lost support, which became a vulnerability issue. So in preparation, I had to upgrade some old programs. I heard rumors that the lower end of framework might be not supported. I was wondering. So my question is, what is the next release of or lack of support of something that's going to be a vulnerability? So some older applications need to be upgraded to the next level.
Sure. So when it comes to lifecycle, the .NET framework versions that ship within the OS adhere to the same lifecycle requirements as the OS itself. So I believe right now, .NET Framework 1.1 is the earliest version of .NET Framework that we support in Windows Server way early. I can't remember what the actual version number is. So what I can tell you is this. As the OS versions essentially get deprecated, so do the .NET Framework versions that are within that OS versions. Now, we have a different lifecycle policy around what we call out-of-band releases of .NET. So if .NET Framework 4.0 is a great example, right? That was released out of band of a specific release of Windows. So typically, we rather than, I believe Windows is a 10-year life cycle? I'm not sure. Anyway, some large number. With out of band releases, our life cycle policy is, I believe, either 2 or 4 years. So what I can tell you is, whenever the next version of Windows kind of gets deprecated, so will that version of the .NET framework that's inside that ship with that OS as well. Unfortunately, I don't have the lifecycle policy for Windows in my head right now, but I believe it's actually documented on MSDN.
I think on Microsoft.com/lifecycle, I think might be a place, or if you just search for that, almost all the product lifecycles and what their policies are. And actually, I think we provide expiration dates of when those will hit as well. So it's a good resource if that's something you have to pay attention to.
Hello. We are in the process of upgrading our .NET framework from 2.0 to 4.0.
The reason why we are moving to 4.0 is because of XP population, because our customer base is predominantly on XP. If we move to 4.5.2, can we run our application on 4XP? Or is there any other workaround? Because we don't want to package 4.0 and 4.5.
I guess my first response is the fact that your customers are willing to stay on XP, do they have an extended support policy with Microsoft, or are they pretty much on their own right now?
They are pretty much on their own.
Okay.
And basically, we don't make money out of our software. We make on our packages.
I see. Okay. So as of .NET Framework 4.5, we no longer support XP, and that's the plan going forward. Since, as I mentioned briefly to the previous gentleman, since the version of .NET Framework is basically tied to the life cycle of OS itself, if the OS itself isn't supported, then the .NET Framework itself isn't supported on that version of the OS. Sorry.
You might have answered this already earlier, but if I wanted to make just a regular desktop app and a Metro app or Windows Store app, is that possible using the universal projects, or do I still need two totally separate solutions?
Project. Yeah. So presently today, we call them universal projects. If you look at the actual implementation, they are still two different projects. We don't.
Right.
The Windows Store and the Phone Store don't accept the same package presently, so you still have kind of two different build targets. If you wanted to kind of add like a third, essentially, you say, I want to create a phone application and a store application, and I still have a WPF application. It's going to be, we call those head projects in the solution. If you hear us talk, use the word head, that's kind of what we refer to. So it'd still be another project in that. I mentioned that Visual Studio extension earlier that you can get on the gallery. It's called the Shared Project Reference Manager, I believe is what it's called. You could use that to kind of put shared code in that, keep it in this shared project and have a WPF application, have a reference to that shared project and get it that way. Of course, Link File Solutions, which is a very similar aspect, shared projects is just a better solution for that.
Right. You just have a bunch of conditional compiler statements.
Like you could use the conditional compile statements. From a .NET perspective, you could look at portable class libraries as well and just determine the profile that matches your deployment targets. I will say if you're trying to share, so one of the benefits of the shared project is like you can share anything, any assets, not just code. Right. There's also nuanced tricks you can do, right? If you make every class a partial class, you can have a set that's shared, and just in your WPF, just continue the partial class in there and add whatever you need. Okay. The one nuance I'll give you is that the shared project, even the extension, like if you had an image that was in your shared project, from a WPF perspective, the tooling expects that, well, actually, the tooling will always try to embed that image into the XE. And if the image is in a shared project, it actually just doesn't know that that's what it needs to do, and so you'll lose that thing. So there are some nuances, which is why it's an extension and not a fully supported thing. Definitely you can do some MS build tricks and pushing some things into the right groups in order to get certain things to work, but not everything should be expected to work using the shared projects with any project type. From a code perspective, you should be pretty safe there with condition compile or partial classes.
Okay, thank you. The shared projects are great, because I used to always be copying files as shortcuts, and you add a new one, and then other developers, they don't do it as a shortcut, they do it as a real file, and you have duplicate, and it's a big pain. So the shared projects are
Now become assets in a check-in type thing.
Yeah, it's an awesome update. Thanks.
Hi, I have a question regarding immersive mode versus desktop mode, and is anything being done to allow desktop applications to better work with immersive mode applications? Or, as a matter of fact, well, let me just give an example. If we have a mission-critical desktop application that needs to get the attention of the user who happens to be on his Windows start screen, right now it's impossible to do that, or practically impossible. Is there anything being done to make that work easier?
So I think that goes along the lines of our evolution of bringing the desktop back forward to the user. I don't think we have things that we can specifically announce, but this dichotomy between sort of an immersive mobile shell and a desktop-only shell that don't talk at all and apps can't be used across the two, I think we realized was not the correct step or the end-all be-all. Like, there are certain devices where immersive definitely makes sense. You have a small phone, you really only want one app up. You have a larger tablet, you might want two apps side by side. You come to a desktop, well, now we're really talking about window management here. And so we don't have anything to announce right now, but that's definitely something that we're working on to improve and have heard lots of similar feedback from customers about that.
Thank you.
I'll just add to that, you know, that one of the just the way that we're thinking is that we believe, you know, what we're calling the universal app platform is the direction that we want apps to think about long term. We realize that people have investments now, and we're looking at ways of how we bridge those investments to that long term investment. So things like you're talking about of, like, you know, notifications and live tiles, and kind of lower level WinRT APIs accessible from the desktop, which you actually can do today. We're thinking about bringing more of those. That's the mental model of how we think about things. You know, it wouldn't be something like live tiles. I don't think is something that we would bring back to Windows 7. Is kind of the other angle of those new things. Like, the new things are in the future OS versions. So there's just kind of that thing to think about as well.
First, Tim, greetings from the Southeast Valley .NET Users Group in Phoenix.
Thank you. Shout out.
Been a while, but miss you. We've got a fair number of old Windows apps, and in moving from XP to 7 especially, we're seeing a big change, and we've got a wide range of laptops and desktops and so on, so we've got a lot of resolution differences. And one of the things that I've run into is hitting some of these higher resolutions is the Windows apps, the desktop apps, don't scale very well. In doing my research, I came across things that said, well, labels scale with the resolution, and there's there are two things in the display. There's a resolution, and then there's the display size, 100%, 150, and so on. And the but text boxes don't scale, buttons don't scale, and so on. And so I take the app and put it on the machine with the different resolution, and it's just all over the place. And so I spend a lot of time trying to, instead of rewriting the app, trying to move things around, position things, and so on, so that they will work on the multiple different, scales. And so then one of the other responses that I saw, we'll just rewrite it into WPF. Well, that's easier said than done when you've got a large, large application and so on. So is there the possibility of revising the scalability so that you can take an app and change the resolution or the scale on a monitor and still have the app be presented the same across both of them?
So are you using like Win32 and 2 for your app, or what's it implemented with? Because you mentioned it's a desktop app but not WPF.
Right, it just WinForms. Just WinForms app. Most of them are been several years old, developed in Visual Studio 2003, 2005, and so on, and carrying over as we as time goes on, the apps are still used widely, and we have other projects and don't have the time to just keep revisiting the older apps all the time, but they still are useful.
So I think that's a – oh, sorry, keep on.
I just think, another thought that I think would be awesome would be a wizard to convert from WinForms to WPF.
Yeah. So I think that's a great example of a feature that we have thought about
starting in our like latest operating system. So if you looked at immersive apps, they had plateaus and scale factors, and we were thinking about these new resolutions that were coming out in screens and phones and stuff like that. And that was completely only for immersive apps. And then we're like, oh, wait, these screens are being used on desktop. What's up with desktop applications? So at least on the WPF side of things, we're now looking at what does it mean to be multi-monitor aware and things like that. So starting in immersive, thinking about it in WPF, I think the next line down the road is like Win32 and WinForms. I don't particularly work on those technologies, so I'm not sure how much the folks thinking about multi-resolutions are trying to bring that down, but I know that's something that's on their mind. So yes, I think that's a great example of something that we thought about first and got it out into our technologies that were most impacted with phones and things like that that have big differences in screen resolutions, and then it's coming back down as necessary to older frameworks.
Just adding to that too, in Windows 8, we actually added some more APIs, lower level APIs, for you to be kind of DPI aware and understand when those two factors kind of change. So they are a little bit lower level APIs. We did publish actually a WPF example on how you could make a WPF app DPI aware using these new APIs. So if you search the MSDN code gallery, probably keywords under WPF DPI, you'll see that code example. It was at build, the last build, that we kind of showed that example as well. So there should be examples of it out there. I believe there's also just straight up C++ examples on how to do that in GDI as well.
To quickly follow up on that, I thought at the keynote they had mentioned something like in the new, I thought I saw something that said WinForm scaling with DPI or something along those lines. Does that ring a bell for anyone? Because I thought I had seen that and I got excited because we have the same problem with our apps.
I mean, it's possible. I know that's something that we as Windows, or I say Windows, like I'm not in Windows. We as Windows are thinking about. I'm not sure which frameworks it has made it to or has not.
I can talk to that a little bit. So with .NET 4.5.2, you can actually now resize your WinForm controls so that they're essentially DPI aware. So hopefully that will actually fix some of your problems automatically if you were to upgrade your .NET to .NET framework 4.5.2.
Cool, thanks.
All right, I'll take the bullet. well, no, so Habib's right. We did make some fixes in the WinForm stack. There are still more that we're aware of and we're looking at to see how we can do it. To be honest, though, there's not a magic bullet in this one. When you look at what happens in those high DPI things, a lot of what results is the fact that there are images and things like that that are part that you put into your WinForms app when you built it that just don't scale. Right, so you end up with what we like to call the teensy button or the teensy icon, right? Like the thing that you just can't even find to click on. So what we're looking at are there things we can do in the Windows Forms kind of framework that at least allow you to go update your applications and make that work better? There's some places where we just blocked it off and we need to fix it. So that's a priority for us to look at, but it's not going to be magic. You'll have to go back and touch those applications again to make them actually respond to it.
Any more questions from the audience here? I see some people here who usually are more talkative. They're being quiet today. I see. Okay, we got one more. There you go.
This is for like Windows 8.1 phone. OpenGL support in the future ever? I guess it's locked down the hardware, but is there a future roadmap for that?
Can you repeat that again? Sorry.
8.1 support.
OpenGL.
OpenGL Windows phone. It's locked down, I guess, on the hardware level, but will that ever open up?
Unknown.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Man.
It's too
straightforward answer there.
Let me guess, you're working on some type of augmented reality. Yeah, that's like two questions. Four phones.
Yeah, maybe a bit in that direction. When will there be an upgrade to the directly?
Sorry, could you speak closer to the mic?
Okay, sorry. Will there be an update to the next or supported version of DirectX, which is directly supported in WPF?
So when will WPF have support for newer versions of DirectX?
Yeah.
I think that goes along the lines of newer features that we're evaluating on older platforms. DirectX specifically, we struggle with the value of simply upgrading to DirectX, say 11. We know at some point we'll have to do it because at some point DX9 will go out of service. But what does just implementing WPF on DX11 give you? Like, maybe it's that you now have DX11 for your D3D surface image. And is that what you really want? Or do you want something like surface interop? So you have a swap chain panel. And so like each level that you go, like to do swap chain panel, wouldn't it be just DX11, it'd be DX11 plus decomp. And so when we look at those larger type features, we look at what's the return on investment for our customers. And strictly going to DX11 is something we're considering, but we're not quite sure what the return on that investment would be.
Okay. And we're currently doing it by sharing a DirectX 11 surface to the DirectX 9 and then can add it to D3D image and then present some video on screen. That's our target. And just another question, what is the current recommendation to build a native desktop application? MFC, WPF, hybrid?
So the recommendation, we've got some XAML, C++, I think that you can use, but we, a lot of people are, it got me there. We get asked this a lot, and this is a concern that we have. So this is something that we're thinking about. What are we going to tell people in the future? We've got a lot of people out there using WP. We know what people are using. We've talked to some of our MVPs, and we know what they would like to do, and we're taking what they would like to do and looking ahead.
Yeah, because it's just so beautiful, XAML, WPFs, and the WinRT things, and so why don't we have it on the desktop for native applications?
Right. Yeah, I'll just reiterate what I said before. Is like I think, you know, the direction that we'd advise is like the areas where we're investing for the Windows client are in the universal app platform, which include, you know, native C++ and XAML support. And we're looking at how, you know, so that's where we believe the long-term vision is. That's where we'd like customers to go. And we're looking at how we can bridge that. You know, if you have a WPF app today that you can run on Win 8.1, you know, how can we help bridge that you can kind of start using some of that new area, which actually may solve some of your DX problems as well. And if you just want, like, hey, I need bare to the metal, I'm creating a competitor to Photoshop, you know, we want to attack those class of apps as well. Office is a prime example that we use internally. Office, you know, is building tablet apps that are using native XAML. You know, eventually I would imagine that they don't want two versions of their apps. And so we need to deliver a forward-looking solution for them as well. And so we look at what we're currently calling the universal app platform as kind of that forward. That's the long-term vision we want where we're going, and we want customers to go for Windows client apps.
Okay, thank you.
All right, folks. So with that, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Feel free to come by, you know, as we're packing up, ask any final questions, and we want to hear your voice, so user voice is a great place to keep voting. Thank you so much for coming today. Keep that feedback coming. Thank you.